Hello and welcome to Don't Miss a Beat, presented by HCP Live Cardiology. Don't Miss a Beat is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Muthu Vadaganathan, and my co-host, Dr. Stephen Green, providing regular news roundup of the latest evidence and clinical trial insights across cardiovascular, renal, and metabolic diseases. The audio versions of Don't Miss a Beat are available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on hcplive.com.
Welcome back to Don't Miss a Beat. We are live here in New Orleans at ACC 2023. And just by the excitement of day one, I've already lost my voice. And I'm so thrilled to be joined by my colleagues here, my co-host, Dr. Stephen Green. And I'm thrilled to introduce Professor Tor Bering Sorensen, my dear friend and colleague, who's a professor of medicine of translational science at the Center of Pragmatic Clinical Trials. He and his colleagues have just presented the Nudge Flu trial, which was simultaneously published in The Lancet and is such an important contribution to the field of implementation science. Tor, welcome and congratulations.
Inviting me. It's a great honor to be here with you today. So I'm very eager and happy that we're going to discuss our trial that you, Muthu, of course, also was a huge contributor to. So thank you.
Oh, Tor, and thank you so much for joining us today. And again, immense congratulations to you, Muthu, and the entire team. So walk us through the concept of the trial, the design and the rationale, and then we'll get to the meat of the results.
Yeah. So first of all, I think it's important to mention how come it's possible to conduct this trial and similar trials in the Danish setting. We have nationwide registries where we can follow any patient contact with hospital, also with GP. We can follow any kind of prescriptions. And using these registries, you know, we can do retrospective analysis. But more importantly, using these registries, we can also conduct pragmatic randomized trials, cheap, efficiently, and fast in these systems. One unique thing about Denmark is that we have a system called the eBox system. So we can use registries to identify phenotypes, get baseline data, and then invite participants to participate in trials directly through this eBox system. It's a secure government designed email system that we have in Denmark. That makes it unique. In the Nudge Flu trial, we only used the eBox system as our interventions, and we randomized all Danish citizens of 65 years or older to receiving different information letters regarding the importance of getting flu vaccinated. And then we followed them through the registries to see whether participants were getting the flu vaccine and could thereby evaluate which letter type might increase flu vaccine the most. So this is the system that we used to conduct the Nudge Flu trial. And of course, as you know, Steve, the importance of it is that many countries, we don't see high enough flu vaccine uptake. In Denmark, it is very, very high. It's above 80% of all eligible participants or inhabitants in Denmark get the flu vaccine amongst the elderly, in which is the group that we conducted this trial. But many countries like your own here in the US, you have much, much lower vaccine uptake, both for flu but also for COVID and other infectious diseases. So that is why it is important to test which kind of information should we give inhabitants in a country to potentially increase vaccine uptake the most.
Yeah, I you know, to amplify that messaging, really vaccination against viral illnesses and especially identifying strategies and overcoming vaccine hesitancy has really taken center stage in the COVID-19 pandemic. And you have taken this to a scale that previous trials really have not taken, and really conducted a true nationwide trial. And the reach of the trial, as far as I am aware, this would be one of the largest trials ever conducted, reaching 1 million Danish adults. And so How did you actually roll this out across a nation? And did you do this in collaboration or under the auspices of Danish health authorities?
That's a great point, a great question. So we did collaborate with a lot of people, including yourself and your great team at Brigham and Women's Hospital, who provided immense input on the behavioral science, not just that we needed to test, but of course, conducting a trial like this, where we nudge everyone in the country, or at least randomize everyone in the country in a trial, you need some kind of health authority on board. We had what the institution that is called Statens Serum Institute, and they are the institute in Denmark that watches over pandemics, and are also the ones who, for example, make sure that the country has enough vaccines for the flu season. And the reason why we collaborated with them is actually the year prior to us starting designing the trial, they sent out for the first time a letter to every Danish citizen above 65 just saying, now it's time to get the flu vaccine. I saw that this letter came out to my parents and, you know, contacted actually them already at the early point saying, you have sent out this letter about the importance of getting the flu vaccine. But, you know, we should randomize different letter types to see whether a specific letter type could potentially increase vaccine uptake the most. And they were completely thrilled on board to do this study. So that was the main Danish authority that we collaborated with as well in this trial and made it possible.
You mentioned the letter types. I think our listeners are probably curious. There's 9 different letter types we're testing. Without going through specifics of each 9 of them, but just in general, what kind of nudges were you testing in this type of trial?
I think, Mucci, you might be a better suited to please take us through the rationale of choosing the types, because it was Muthu and his team that actually, you know, guided us in the importance of different types.
So each of the 9 different letters tested a different behavioral concept. And the goal was to keep them relatively distinct so we can identify, hopefully, meaningful messaging that can be translated even in the future for other interventions. And these nudges included, for instance, reminder-based nudges where a letter would be resent 2 weeks after the initial notification. This type of reinforcement messaging is common in behavioral science. Some were related to social norming, so comparing one to their peers. Some were game framing on elements that were perhaps even outside of influenza virus itself. One specific nudge was a cardiovascular game framed nudge that talked about the cardiovascular benefits of influenza vaccination. And others talked about loss framing, what would happen if you missed out on vaccination. And so these types of nudges have been tested in smaller scale settings, but I think that Nudge Flu really took it and upscaled this in a nationwide trial. So Tor, tell us about the 2 of the 9 strategies that were actually helpful.
And because I must admit, I guess you were also surprised, because I was quite surprised. So we found 2 of these interventions did increase the vaccine uptake the most. And the one which I, prior to initiating the trial, would, you know, thought before that it would be one of the effective ones, was purely the reminder, you know, sending out a letter about the flu vaccine 2 weeks prior to the actual vaccine season starting, and then on the day of when flu vaccination started in Denmark. That increased the flu vaccine uptake with 0.71%, I believe it was in the 0.70s. However, extremely interesting also for us as cardiologists were that our cardiovascular gain-framing notch actually increased the vaccine uptake the most with 0.89%. So informing inhabitants in a country that a flu vaccine not only protects you against potentially getting the flu, but it also might have downstream protective effect on cardiovascular outcomes, such as a heart attack or heart failure. That was the one notch strategy that significantly increased vaccine uptake in both. And interestingly, in that you also look for effect modification, and specifically that notch strategy with the cardiovascular framing notch strategy, it seemed to be even more effective amongst the inhabitants who hadn't received the flu vaccine the year prior. So potentially in vaccine hesitant groups, informing people that you're not only being protected against the flu, but you're also being protected against more severe outcomes, it is even more useful. And in that group, they actually increased the vaccine uptake with close to 2.5%.
That, absolute benefit in perspective, in terms of, number needed to nudge, was that absolute magnitude of benefit what you expected? Was it smaller magnitude, larger magnitude? What were you expecting?
So I think in general, the magnitude, it was more than we actually designed this study to, because we powered our trial to look at an even smaller magnitude of increase, absolute magnitude increase. But you have to be aware that Denmark, we are also testing this on a popular background vaccine uptake of more than 80%. I think it's one of the most vaccinated populations. So that is one thing that you have to bear in mind. But despite the fact that the absolute numbers might not sound that impressive, you have to be aware that it's an email. It's an email. You can't really get a cheaper intervention than just sending out email letter. So the cheapness of this intervention to potentially increase uptake in itself should also be something that we have to take into account. And we did. How many people need to nudge to increase vaccine uptake the most. In amongst those, just a CV nudge letter, you had to send out a little more than 100 letters to get one person extra getting vaccinated. However, in the vaccine hesitant group, it was close to 40 letters, 40 emails that you had to send out to get just one additional person vaccinated. So in general, taking in the whole population, the reminder letter that increased to 0.70% and the CV notch concept letter that increased to 0.89%. Into a US perspective, we did a calculation saying that if you embedded this in the US, we would get close to 500,000 extra people vaccinated. With just those small numbers, but you could imagine that here in the US, where you have vaccine uptake, it's with 60 to 70, the absolute effect might be greater, right?
Definitely a very strong background standard of care that nudge flu was tested against, which is a testament to the effectiveness of these strategies. So talking about the US and talking about other settings outside of Denmark, I think top of mind in folks internalizing nudge flu is the generalizability of the findings, and how can we translate nudge flu to other settings that may not have similar mass communication systems already built in to the infrastructure of the country?
That's a great question, and that is one of the limitations about this study, right? How this governmental letter system exists in Denmark, in Scandinavian countries, in Ireland has actually also bought it. It's a Danish company originally. So it isn't broadly, around. But I know that you here in the US, and you know much more about this than I, because you have, the different providers of healthcare or systems where you could at least potentially embed it. But I might give you back the question because I'm not really certain about how.
I think we do have somewhat mass communication systems, even in the United States. For instance, we often get alerts, text messages, when there are local emergencies.
Exactly.
there are, and you would argue that influenza vaccination should take similar priority in averting illness at the national level. We also have health insurance covered populations where letters are routinely sent out about various alerts, about changes in formulary, about various medication-related issues. This would be a prime opportunity. We also have health systems that are actually quite large and serve diverse populations that could similarly be leveraged. And so I think each of these can be distinct opportunities that can work as a patchwork to be able to reach really large scale populations, even in countries like the U.S.
I think from the U.S. perspective, even if we try to do something in the U.S. like this, operationally that could look different. But I think the messages that you portray in your trial are probably something that might generalize very nicely, you know, focusing on patients that, you know, the cardiovascular benefits could be accrued, the value of a serial letter approach, these kind of lessons learned. Also with focusing mostly on maybe patients that hadn't got the vaccine prior in terms of, you know, lower number needed to nudge type of strategy for that patient population. So I think the lessons are incredibly valuable here, even if we in the United States operationally we might have to implement this a little different, whether it's at a local or health system, or even at the national level, but might be higher lift at the national level, of course.
So the second major question that comes to mind is, we're talking about influenza vaccination of critical importance at the global scale, but in cardiovascular medicine, we've now seen inertia across so many different interventions, therapies, that has frustrated both the community and as well as clinicians. And so how do we actually, and can we apply the learnings from Nudge Food, or even the platform of Nudge Food, to potentially nudge other interventions that may be similarly beneficial to population health?
That's a great question, Glenn. And as you know, because you're already on board of those studies as well, we are, so the Nudge Food trial was the first trial piloting the system. Now we've learned how to use it. So we are already moving forward to conducting the Nudge diabetes trial, where we are identifying everyone in the country from these nationwide registries that I mentioned before, who are not getting guidelines recommended therapy. So diabetics who have ASCVD or heart failure that could benefit, and we know that we have medication that potentially or we know reduce the risk of cardiovascular outcomes. Trying to figure out how to nudge them, but also nudging the GPs to see, is it the GPs we need to inform that new medication exists that is life-saving for these populations, or is it the patients themselves, and potentially whether nudging both could increase uptake of guideline-directed medical therapy both. And in these settings, when you do these nudge trials, we don't only get, you know, information about how to increase vaccine or guideline-directed medical therapy the most. We also, in a randomized setting, if on a population level, what does an increase in uptake means in cardiovascular outcome reduction? So you get numbers from the real world, randomized setting, on how much these changes in medications that we know from the conventional trials, how much of that is actually translated to reduction outcomes in the population.
Kudos to you for actually taking full advantage of the infrastructure and the data health system to actually test these important randomized trial questions that you offer, or such about behavioral science. You know, and I think the messages that you hopefully continue to gain are going to be so instrumental for, again, ASCVD, heart failure across the whole host of that discussion. So congratulations to you, Mutu, for just really taking full advantage of this and really, you know, putting implementation science, the ultimate test, randomized trial.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, I want to thank you very much for listening to this episode of Don't Miss a Beat live in the American Cardiology Conference in New Orleans. I want to thank our special guest, Dr. Tor Behring Sorensen, and congratulate him and me too on the Nudge Flu trial and the simultaneous publication of Lancet. And thanks again for listening. You can follow us on hcpcardiology.com and also listen to the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thank you very much. See you next time.